2, tape number 1, and the first part of tape number 1, of course, was the Bendix part, and then without introduction, we're interviewing George Putnam II. George Putnam, and we're at his home at 703 25th Place in Boynton, Boynton Beach, Florida. What's the zip here?
33435.
And it's Saturday, the 22nd of May, 1976. We arrived at 9 o'clock. We've been talking for 2 hours and 25. I've been talking for 2 hours and 25 minutes. Now we've got George talking.
Your mother, you were talking about her ideas and things that she did early in life.
Well, very much so. She's always an outdoors woman. You know, she was a great hunter and fisherman, but her father was in tune that way, too. She went to Wellesley, and this might have something to do with it. I don't know. But when she moved to Florida, and when I was very small here in the 1920s, 30 and 31, shortly after my father and mother were divorced, and she decided to build a house that was completely different than anybody else's, because in those days everybody moved into town. Well, she moved out of town, so it just has to be different. They're a little bit, I think they're kind of opinionated, really. They're strong-willed, and they do things differently.
Your mother then was a strong-willed, determined woman.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Did she dominate your father?
Well, I don't really think so. I don't know. I don't think so, because I was very small in those days. And during the Rye era, when they lived in the big house at Rye, they were still in the publishing business, and there were people like Martin Johnson, and of course they republished Lindbergh's book, you know, the first one. I know my father was always proud of having that check. He had the canceled check that he wrote to Lindbergh of something like $100,000, which in those days was a fantastic amount for a book. And this was burned and destroyed at Lone Pine when the house burned there.
Oh, up at Lone Pine.
Yeah. But he had that, and I think this one was something proud of. But they were very busy. There was always a lot of activity there at the house, you know, people and writers and this sort of thing.
So your mother and father were back in New York by 21. You know when they left Oregon?
I don't really know. I would guess, because World War One, my father was in the Army, so there was a gap in there. Whether, and she was back east then, because she's told about the great flu epidemic in Washington when so many people died in this country. So I don't know whether they came back for World War One and went back to Oregon for a year or two. I think not.
No, I think not once they came out. No, he went to Poland in 1919 for Colliers. He was a major, wasn't he?
In World War II, yeah.
Two or one?
I'm not sure what he was in number one, but in number two he ended up as a major. He was an intelligence officer with the Air Force and flew over to Burma.
Well, I have a passport China. When he was going to Poland. They had made, and they called him Major Putnam, and I didn't realize, but I knew he'd gone into the Air Force, Army Air Force, as a captain, I think, when he went in.
That's right, and he got promoted to the major. He spent a lot of time over in the China area. Fascinating pictures of those thousands of Chinese carrying baskets of rock, building those runways at Chungking and places, you know, to fly in supplies for the Chinese armies.
Well, now you were born then in Port Chester, which was right next to Rye, in 1921. Bob, and your father was, and he had he's gotten control of the publishing company at that time, or restarted?
I'm not sure what the fact, at that time it was a going concern, and it had been, you know, for a good number of years, and just how he fit into it as a family enterprise. I don't know all the family details of who was actually boss or whatnot, but he ended up running the thing, and of course the Depression got him, and it might have been a combination of factors, but they lost it.
But things were
good. A good picture of you?
Very good picture. Yeah, I don't think I have that. But now, in the 20s, things were riding high. This was the peak of the publishing career then.
I think so. That they did all the book stories, you know, the youngster stories like my brother going up to Greenland, and then the Galapagos expedition with Will Beebe down to the Galapagos Islands. And this all fit in right. It was just the right time to start these type of books.
Do you remember when they went up to Baffin and on those trips?
Oh, I don't know, but this you could find out.
I
think the Greenland was like 1926 and Baffin Land was 1927 or 8. My brother can tell you exactly these things because he was there. See, I never was involved in any of those things. I was very small and
pretty
sickly.
You were quite young at this time.
I was very sickly,
four,
too.
Five.
Oh, yeah, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, something like that.
You had some problems with your...
I had polio or something like that when I was small. I was around 9 years old before I could really walk. But I think that's one reason my mother moved to Florida.
Well, now, when was the Ryan House built about, best you recollect?
I would say 1928, something like that.
Around 28?
I would think so.
That was right about the...
Right at the peak of the economic boom and everything else, you know.
They had wheat going
have been,
for them.
Right, right. It couldn't have been... You couldn't have done all those things at the worst time as far as salvaging anything out of them, really.
Well, now...
you know, speaking...
The ride home... Oh, go ahead.
The speaking about... the interest of my father in the Sierra Club and so on. Some years ago I wrote the Sierra Club and they sent me one of the things he wrote about the Kaweah Basin or somewhere up in the Sierras, published like 1906 or 7.
Yeah,
and they said there'd been things earlier than that, but they'd been destroyed during the San Francisco earthquake. They didn't have no prior record, but he was a member of one of the first ones, I guess. He was interested in things like this.
Of course, he could have only, you know, he'd only have been prior to the earthquake, he would have only been
he'd been pretty young himself, right. And how he worked for us, I don't know. But he was interested in them, I would say, for two reasons. Not only that his real genuine interest in this phase of ecology as it's known today, but also the creative interest of the people involved in of storytelling, you know, for books, publishing and so on. The two go together, you know, really. You get somebody like Martin Johnson, which were the hunters, weren't they? He went to Africa. Well, you know, it all sort of ties in. So,
did
I think
father go on a trip to Africa?
Not that I know of, but he published their book. I have vague, very small, early recollections of those people, you know, at the house in Rye with their bows and arrows and shields and all kind of stuff from those places.
Well, your house in Rye was a collecting point for...
There were a lot of different, diverse types of people, that's for sure, sure. But they're all promoting books or stories or something of the sort, or ideas or expeditions or something.
Now, you say you were, we're talking about 27, 28, 29, you were only 7, 8, 9 years
sure.
old, and you were bed, or you were not too ambulatory.
No, I was always pretty puny and really. If I'd been a chicken, they should have drowned me at, you know, 3 days old or something.
Come on now. Did you, but you lived at Rye those times?
Mm-hmm. After my mother and father were divorced, and then they moved to Florida.
Did your mother divorce your father?
Yes.
That's what we were told. Mm-hmm. We had always previously thought that your father divorced your mother.
No, my mother divorced my father. I feel real certain of that because she moved to Nevada to establish residence. We stayed there in, I guess, Reno. Oh, I don't know what it was, 6 or 8 weeks or 2 months or whatever was necessary in those days.
Well, your mother married Captain
Upton.
Right after that, too. I mean,
oh, not right after, but within a year or two, yes.
And then she moved to Florida.
But did you stay with your...
with my mother.
Stay with your mother.
Yeah.
Did you remember what year it was?
That which?
That she went to Reno. I get savage.
Oh, I'd say 19... The latter... It was winter months. Yeah, I remember snow, so... I would say it was the fall of 1929 or the spring of 1930. It would have to be 1929 or 1930. You know, probably 29.
Very nice. Stock market crash.
Well, this about everything just went
everything
down.
Everything went hot all at once.
Sure did. But my father ended up with a house at Rye, and of course I would come to see him at times and spend some time with him on and off. But basically my life was spent with my mother in Florida.
But you moved to Florida right at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Did this happen all of a sudden?
That's right. I mean, all of a sudden, within a year's time frame, I'd say, yeah.
You were living in Hawaii with your father and mother one part of the year, and another part of the year you're living in Florida with your mother, and your father's still living in Hawaii by himself.
That's right. Now, there might have been 15 months time frame. It might have been 18 months, but I'm inclined to think it was about probably within the year of 19, say the summer of 29 to the summer of 1930, because that's about the time my mother ended up down in Fort Pierce.
And after that, you primarily lived with your mother.
That's right. Basically, that's correct.
So
well,
that,
these books show that Baffin Island and whatnot is 27.
Mm-hmm.
And so when David was going with his father on those expeditions, mm-hmm. your mother wasn't going along then.
No, she went part way in a couple of them. Yeah, I do know that. I don't know just how far, but, you know, up to Nova Scotia or someplace.
Well, this kind of left things a little rough on you, didn't it?
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you exactly who looked after me, but somebody obviously did. I don't know, was it a maid or I was shunted off to my aunt. I probably stayed with my aunts quite a bit. See, my mother had one sister, Mary, who had no children. And she was very fond of children, and all the children of my cousins, all our age group, we really always liked that woman. She was pleasant to be with.
Mary.
So I have an idea, this is where I know I spent a lot of time there, but when this trip went on or that trip, I couldn't tell you. I just don't know. Somehow I survived.
Did you go to public schools?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Start right out when you were 6 years old?
Yeah, well, not at six because I couldn't walk very good. I went to school in Fort Pierce all the way from... Oh, I didn't get quite through graduation, but almost. There's a schoolhouse. You see this painting here?
That's
a one-room schoolhouse.
And all grades?
It's now a public park, and that's the first place I ever went to school in Florida. Our little artist friend, I got him to paint that for me some years ago, just for the heck of it.
Well, then your mother's father, or father, grandpa, I can't remember which, but he had been established in Florida for quite a
while. That's
right.
He came out like 1912 or 13 or something like that. Yes, he always was. Do it down here.
And so when she came down here, she kind of came down to her father?
Well, he was, of course, he was living there. And yes, basically, that was why she came to Fort Pierce. She had been there as a young girl.
She'd been raised here.
No, she hadn't been raised here, but she had been here during the winter vacations, I suppose, and summer trips and things like that. So she knew about Florida. That's why she came to Fort Pierce rather than somewhere else, I'm sure. Because her family were here.
Is this when she went into the family real estate business?
Pardon?
Is this when your mother went into the family real estate business?
Well, she didn't go into the real estate business as such.
Was she independently wealthy before she married your father? Or was just her family?
I don't think she was herself. Her father was, of course, quite wealthy. And, you know, I don't know what was given to them and things like this. I don't know.
Well, try and put two and two together. I want to interject something. Please correct it if you think it's real. It seems to me like your mother and father divorced just before the big crash.
Mm-hmm.
And if a settlement had been made, financial settlement between your mother and father had been made, and let's say they somehow split the sheets. That's an Oregon vernacular. But your father evidently ended up with his part of the publishing company in the Rye House, and your mother were given other assets of some sort. When she moved to Florida, her financial assets must have been separate from your father's.
Oh, yes. But bear in mind, in those days, there weren't a great deal of liquid assets of any sort around, because this company here, it wasn't a public company. It was a private company. I don't even know if it paid any dividends in those days. It was just a family operation. And the other things, there might have been some stocks and things, but I would say relatively small amount. I just don't think there was much.
But when the crash came, which was the fall and winter of 29, it just got worse and worse and worse. Everything, your father seemed to have lost everything except the Rye House. And, of course, how deeply it was mortgaged, I don't really know either. But your mother's, her assets seemed to survive better.
Well, she didn't have very many assets, so there weren't many assets to survive. Of course, her father and mother were still living then, and they were busy. I don't know whether, you know, they help her get established here. Just one. I couldn't tell you that because I don't really know.
Do you know if your father paid your mother alimony yet?
I don't think she ever did, no. I think the businesses were all so bad, and I guess he was lucky to be able to pay Mrs. Berger more than anything else.
Well, now you say you came down here with your mother primarily, and what happened to David? Of course, he was older. He was older,
and those are the years where he would be going to college, which he did. I think he went to Brown. And he worked for the Boston and Maine Airways, too, at one time.
That's right. He went to work when...
And so he's always been attuned to
flying. That age difference was quite...
Yeah, it was 8 years different.
Time.
Yeah. When I moved here, he was in college. So, you know, we were never close as brothers because there's too much age difference. And doing dissimilar things always. It's always been that way.
Okay, now then you stayed here, and did you go to college and everything here?
No, I never even quite finished high school. My only college has been with the University of California up at Davis. You know where Davis is?
Oh, yeah.
I went to the agricultural branch there because that's what I was interested in, but that didn't last long either.
I've seen pictures of you. Well, I don't want to skip too. Let's not skip quite that far out fast. I want to get back to you because life had not been too damn nice to you so far.
It gets better as I go along.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. But you know, you got a bad blow as a child with whatever your sickness was, polio or whatever. You know, and well, it hurts when you're young. You can't make the accommodations, and it would always hurt. Then by the time you're just becoming conscious of your family, your mother and father are going off with your other brother.
Well, I never participated in any of those things, and I don't recall it ever bothering me particularly because I was 8 years different. I was smaller, and I probably never gave it a thought.
But then all of a sudden now, you're not even allowed to have a father anymore. He's pulled out from underneath you.
Well, I'm sure these things are difficult for youngsters, and I suppose most youngsters who go through this, you just sort of get hazy after a while, and I don't recollect any particular animosity or difficulty. I'm sure there was, but I don't recollect it particularly.
Do you think your mother overcompensated a little bit trying to?
I'm sure she's been very helpful to me because realizing now, you know, the time that she spent with me when I was small making me walk. For instance, we used to take long walks. Well, who was the Australian woman, the sister who started the...
Yeah.
Kenny of the
hot packs
and exercise and muscle massaging for youngsters. And of course, this got to be fairly common for a while. And maybe by instinct, she thought of being an outdoors person herself, she thought that everybody should be made to do it. And I have a lot of memories of it hurt me, you know, physically to do it. But apparently, it was a good thing to do. Like if you go to the hospital today, they get you out of the bed, you know, in 2 days and make you walk, even if it kills you. Well, they found this is the best type of therapy.
So your mother was the one that helped you do it.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Yeah.
With
well,
you very
she sure did.
I don't think you ought to give the impression that she over-mothered you.
Oh, no, my mother's not that way.
And being very independent and do it on your own.
I don't think my mother could mother anybody.
No.
Well, I have to say this, that Elgin has a mother just like that. So I can picture she's very determined and very strong. But she makes you do it, too.
Oh, no,
she makes you strong.
Oh, yeah, she's not like mother that sits in the kitchen and makes cakes. And no, not at all.
But you didn't feel any animosity towards either your father or your older brother?
No, I don't recollect anything like that, particularly. I don't think my father was a very good businessman as far as business is concerned, but...
Every
time you have to bear in mind any comments is you have to be done in the context of the times at that moment.
Right, and things were bad.
And the things were bad, and he was desperate in many respects. So, you know, he had to get people that were writers and publishers and the movie people and whatnot to, you know, be able to finance things that he wanted to do, including these things with the media. So he had to encourage this and use other people's brains too to do it. My father could never run a business where you had to punch a time clock or sit down there and manufacture something and turn it out. He just wasn't that way. It had to be something creative So if you're a creative type person, you're a little bit eccentric to start with, I guess. And no, he's not a good, he was not a good businessman, as I would call it.
You don't feel that he made investments that were very sound? Or
I never heard of any that were very sound. They might have been interesting and a lot of fun. But as far as putting coin in the realm in the bank, no, I don't think so.
But
there's a lot of people this way today, too.
Over our period of research, many people always thought that your father was a very well-to-do man. But
no, he was not.
We were able to determine that he was not.
No, he was not. He was skirting in thin ice.
So that
all
our
my
impression
life,
then, is correct, that
that's
financially
right.
Your father was not very well off.
No, he was not. He always had a real tough time. This I know. Mr. Holly probably
yeah.
could tell you these things,
well,
too. Yeah.
But he was very reluctant, you know, to plant anything. He did have all his tax returns and all.
I think he did those things properly, but with my father's death, there was nothing left whatsoever. So,
no, he told us a story about that. When your father died, all there was that
little house
there, and that was it.
Death Valley, that's about it. Yeah.
Have you ever been out there?
Oh, yes.
Kind of interesting.
Yes, it is.
Place.
Yeah.
Getting back to the 30s then, you lost the as you said, the publishing business went from bad to worse, and as far as I'm able to determine, that by the end of 1930, there was nothing left except the house in Rye, and like I say, I have no idea how much encumbrances had been placed on it. But I can find no other assets whatsoever in your father's
I don't
estate
think there
at that
was
point.
But
he did have a wealth of experience and friendship.
Lots of
contacts.
You bet. You know, people in the Explorers Club and these museum people, you know, and all those kind of folks. It's a whole different world. And he tried, well, he worked with Paramount Motion Pictures. I don't know whether what he did with them in New York, whether he was connected with them for a year or two. And I'm not sure just exactly what you probably know more about that than I do. But I do remember that because he did some kind of work with them. And so I think publishing and movies and stories and these sort of things go together. And maybe he got stories that, you know, he was able to sell as an agent to movies and things too. I don't know. But I would guess that things sort of all tie in together. This is a field I know nothing about, my own personal experience with. This is my recollection of those years. It was very difficult. I mean, he married Amelia and wanted to do these things too. And so, you know, it was hard to do.
Did you know Amelia very well?
Yes, I liked her very much. Yeah, we got along.
Did you know her at the time before your father married her?
No, I can't say that I do. I've probably seen her, but I was real small. I don't recollect her then, but I do afterwards.
But you knew her quite well after you married her.
Oh, yeah. Memories like fixing the cars and see if the engines ran right. And you start up your car and you let it run a little while before you drove it so the oil would go around, you know, all these mechanical things and this. And she was a nice person to me. Yeah, I liked him. And I have good recollections of her.
Do you remember her wearing a bracelet that your father gave her?
I can't say that I do particularly.
We've been trying to find this bracelet and nobody.
It was supposedly made from the toe of an elephant. Probably more likely ivory, but it says the toe of an elephant. And it had flecks of silver inlaid into it, at rather random flecks. And she started wearing it just about the time your father and she were married. And you know how newspapers and magazines will. They'll make up nice little stories to explain all occurrences, and anyway, it was something your father had supposedly picked up on one of his many of his African adventures.
Well, I'm sure
maybe
that
I could never find
he might explain
your father ever went to Africa.
To stress the truth a little bit and things like this, because it makes a good story.
It was a good luck piece of hers, mm-hmm. and she always wore it. And but she didn't take it with her on the last trip. And the only reason
does anybody know where it was left then?
Well, your father wrote an article about it and published it around 1938. But that's the last mentioned like I never had. He mentioned that she'd left it behind. Without getting too deep in, I guess you know your father toying around with spiritualists and whatnot and seances and things like this.
My father did? Yes. This is news to me.
And this bracelet was brought up in one of the seances, and he asked immediately what she wanted done with it.
You sure this is not just another one of these stories?
It might be a story he made up, but
well,
he wrote it.
I would be inclined to put a lot more credence on it. You thought this is interesting and ring a bell,
yeah,
rather
but,
than being factual.
The interesting part, the only reason I have an interest in the bracelet is one of the hardest things to get out of people's head is that Amelia was captured by the Japanese and all that. So have you ever seen these series of pictures that were taken where the Japanese one of the bad ladies are serving her? Well, she had, those pictures were, I can tell you where they were taken. They were taken in January 1935 at Christian Holmes' place on Waikiki, on Kalakaua Avenue, which is now the Queen Serve restaurant. I don't know if you have ever been over there and tied those two together. If you ever go to Honolulu, go to the Queen Serve restaurant, you're going to Christian Holmes' residence. But anyway, that's where those pictures were taken. And she was wearing that bracelet in the pictures. So, but she did not take the bracelet with her on the last trip.
So she
couldn't have had the bracelet.
Spy for the Japanese or whatever.
I probably, yeah.
But the funny part of it is, I've asked Jeannie, I've asked Peg, I've asked everybody, and nobody has any recollection of this bracelet. And yet your father did write about it. And I've studied all the pictures of Amelia on the trip. And she did not have the bracelet with her on that trip. And your father made a specific point of it that she had.
She wore very little personal jewelry.
That I was going to say this because I went to the 1933 World's Fair with my father in Chicago. I remember that quite well.
I had several pictures of you there with
her. Taken of her in a parachute?
Yes, and I remember, I really was distressing to me because every morning when you try to get out of that hotel room, there was always a mob of people, inventors. I remember one guy had, his idea was a, like a butterfly wing or something, you know, you could flap like this and fly and all sorts of things. And I suppose anybody in this field, they're subjected to this sort of thing constantly.
You thought that was rather odd at the time.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was real small. And of course, it was upsetting, distressing to me. But,
do you have pictures of those?
No.
Would you like me? I have.
You do, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's
we have lots of pictures. Yeah,
thank
we'll
you.
Have to go through.
You've got a lot more stuff than I do. Yeah.
I have pictures of you here at the fair. With
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned.
As a matter of fact, that's how I didn't know you existed until I tried to identify who is this, you know, the media is taking around at the fair in Chicago or exposition.
Well,
I finally found out that it was George Putnam.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't know there was a George Putnam until then.
I have flown that auto generator that used to fly for the Beechnut chewing gum people.
Uh-huh.
I remember that because they gave me, since I was just a youngster, sticks of chewing gum and boards. They were this long. They were the right width for chewing gum, but they hadn't been sliced yet. And, of course, when you're that age, you have a tremendous amount of fun. When, you know, I've got chewing gums in 3-foot slabs like this between two boards.
Now, how did you happen to get that now? Because
well, they were selling, they were advertising for the beach nut chewing gum people,
right,
which now they make baby foods and so on. And you see, this is what I'm talking about. My father's always a problem of how to finance things. So you have to, you fly this thing and you advertise for the company. Now, this is the way this is done. I don't know whether Beechnut paid for all of it or what, but, you know, when you do something, if you're a photographer, you've got to have a market for your pictures. Someone has to buy them, and you maybe advertise Lucky Strikes or whoever your sponsor is. But I remember this. Just recently, I acquired a photograph of that ship where it crashed in, was it Austin, Texas, or Amarillo?
Texas.
Somewhere, yeah. Well, I hadn't seen that in years, you know, and I remember that. This train up.
I have a picture of it standing right on its nose.
You do. You got a better one than I do. Mine is just, was that 1931 or 7 or something? I forgot.
That was quite a trip. That was the first time any auto yard had ever flown across the United States.
Yeah, I have that one too. Matter of fact, I just got it here about 3 weeks ago.
Come out our way sometime and we'll get together and I'll show you.
Oh, boy.
I have movies.
I
your father and Amelia sound movies are talking to each other.
Well, I remember the newsreels of my brother arriving in Los Angeles and my father greeting him there, you know, when the search was going on.
I haven't seen that.
I don't know, it was half a news or just for kind of an interesting thing.
Well, back up now. I have two problems. What might I use your bathroom?
Would you like to have a green and red one, or would you want a
white one? You will find I am completely unbiased in my use of bathroom.
Go right in there as a
all right.
One.
Yeah, you can help.
I'll shut this off. We're going to get another reel on here. This is just about over with. Okay, this is the end of side two, tape number one, interview with George Putnam. And it's now almost noon on Saturday the 22nd of May. And this tape's just about over. I'm going to put in a...